wildest fantasies of the past. And equally important, Copernicus, Newton, Darwin, and Einstein have so changed our mode of thinking and our outlook on the universe that we might seem almost a new species to the most brilliant of our predecessors. And will our successors, 1,000 years from now, look back on us with the same pity with which we regard our ignorant, superstitious, disease-ridden, short-lived ancestors? We believe that we know the answers to questions that they could not even ask. But what surprises does the third millennium hold for us? Well, here it comes. A great bell began to toll the strokes of midnight. The last vibration throbbed into silence. And that's the way it was. Goodbye, wonderful and terrible 20th century. Then the picture broke into a myriad fragments, and a new commentator took over, speaking with the accent which Poole could now easily understand and which immediately brought him up to the present. Now, in the minutes of the year 3001, we can answer that question from the past. Certainly, the people of 2001, who you were just watching, would not feel as utterly overwhelmed in our age as someone from 1001 would have felt in theirs. Many of our technological achievements they would have anticipated. Indeed, they would have expected satellite cities and colonies on the moon and planets. They might even have been disappointed because we are not yet immortal and have sent probes only to the nearest stars. Abruptly, Indra switched off the recording. We'll see the rest later, Frank. You're getting tired, but I hope it will help you to adjust. Thank you, Indra. I'll have to sleep on it, but it certainly proved one point. What's that? I should be grateful I'm not 1001-er dropped into 2001. That would be too much of a quantum jump. I don't believe anyone could adjust to it. At least I know about electricity, and won't die of fright if a picture starts talking at me. I hope, Poole told himself, that confidence is justified. Someone once said that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. Will I meet magic in this new world and be able to handle it? Chapter 6. Brain Cap. I'm afraid you'll have to make an agonizing decision, said Professor Anderson with a smile that neutralized the exaggerated gravity of his words. I can take it, Doctor. Just give it to me straight. Before you can be fitted with your brain cap, you have to be completely bald. So here's your choice. At the rate your hair grows, you'd have to be shaved at least once a month. Or you could have a permanent. How's that done? Laser scalp treatment kills the follicles at the root. Is it reversible? Yes, but that's messy and painful and takes weeks. Then I'll see how I like being hairless before committing myself. I can't forget what happened to Samson.
Who?
Character in a famous old book. His girlfriend cut off his hair while he was sleeping. When he woke up, all his strength had gone.
Now I remember.
Pretty obvious medical symbolism. Still, I wouldn't mind losing my beard. I'd be happy to stop shaving once and for all.
I'll make the arrangements. And what kind of wig would you like?
Poole laughed. I'm not particularly vain. I think it would be a nuisance and probably won't bother. Something else I can decide later. That everyone in this era was artificially bald was a surprising fact that Poole had been quite slow to discover. His first revelation had come when both his nurses removed their luxuriant tresses without the slightest sign of embarrassment, just before several equally bald specialists arrived to give him a series of microbiological checks. He had never been surrounded by so many hairless people, and his initial guess was that this was the latest step in the medical profession's endless war against germs. Like many of his guesses, it was completely wrong. And when he discovered the true reason,
He amused himself by seeing